I'd like to welcome everyone out to the City Council work session meeting of June 3rd, 2025. Great to see friends and family here for all these officers that are being sworn in. And that's our first item. So I will turn it over to Chief Black to introduce them. Thank you, Chief.
Sorry, I was just telling our city attorney, this stresses me out more than just about anything you know, because I just hope everything goes well for these employees tonight as we celebrate and acknowledge the beginning of many and the end of one career here tonight. And I think as many times as we've done this, this is the first time we've actually had someone that's departing on the same night too. And so I look forward to recognizing Terry also. Mayor and Council, I'd like to invite up five officers. Now, not all five are brand new today, so or this even this month. I realized as we started putting this together, I got a little behind. And so I'm going to invite Officer Destin Coons, Officer Jorge Carmona, Officer Tyson Bishop, Officer Jessica Lancaster, and Officer Megan Kenny to come up and join me here. And I'm going to just let them tell you most of the details about them. Come on up, you guys, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, and I'm also going to invite up Myla. Come on up, Myla. Myla's probably going to be the hit of the show tonight, and we're going to tell you a little bit about Myla. So, Officer Coons has been with us actually for a year. Now, we weren't sure it was going to make the whole year, so we've held on. He talks about all the fun and exciting things he could do elsewhere, so I just kind of hoped he'd stay with us for a while, but he's at least said he's going to stay with us another couple weeks. So, Destin, I apologize it took us this long to get here. And Jorge has been with us since last July. Is that right? Destin came to us from Salt Lake County Law Enforcement Services at the Sheriff's Office out there. Jorge came to us from the Salt Lake School District. He worked for Horizonte School, not as a law enforcement officer, but in their youth support sections. And I just have to say, both of them have brought unique characteristics to this department and in their own ways have really contributed so much to our community, and they're both functioning on their own. They're not an FTO, and they've just been they're just wonderful officers to have. And then Tyson Bishop over here, far end on my left. Tyson graduated in April from the Salt Lake Community College Police Academy. He comes from a family of law enforcement, including a, I don't know what to call Austin, friend, brother, stepbrother. So, something that's not biological, but they're brothers, deeper than I'm brothers with my own brothers, I think. So he's come and joined us here. Officer Jessica Lancaster graduated from the police academy in the same class. I think Jessica was the top academic. Is that right, Jessica? Or did you miss? You helped somebody, and they passed you.
Yeah, my friend unfortunately got one more point more than me after spending hours with him studying.
She tutored somebody so well that at the last minute they pulled out one point ahead and graduated. And Tyson was the class president of that graduating class also. And then Officer Megan Kenny has joined us. She has been a deputy in Placer, County, California for the past year. And her family is from the South Davis Bountiful area. And she has decided that Utah is a great place, and she was referred to this department by one of my great mentors, probably one of the best mentors I've ever had, her uncle, Buzz Nielsen, who was the chief of West Valley Police when I worked there. And I spent 20-plus years working with her wonderful uncle, and he's here tonight. I think it would be remiss of me not to recognize the legacy that he has left law enforcement in the state of Utah. So with that, I'm going to invite him up, starting with Destin. Destin, if there's anything else you want to say about, just tell him who you are. Jorge, Tyson, Jessica, Megan. Let me introduce Myla real quick. Come on up here, Scott. You know Officer Bradley. Officer Bradley's been our school resource officer at Spectrum for this last year. I think most of you were here when we approved that agreement with Spectrum. One of our core values is creativity in the department. And several months ago, Officer Bradley, who has just become the star of the Spectrum campus down there, came to me with an idea that a lot of these students, when they're in their crises, just need something to help calm them down. We've all seen these kits that officers are given, or that counselors are given, these therapy calming kits. But this is Myla. She is an official in-training therapy dog that is part of the North Salt Lake Police Department. And Myla will be assigned to Officer Bradley as the therapy dog for Spectrum Academy. She's in training all summer to deal with the variety of circumstances she's going to face. I watched last week as the trainers, the certification authority for therapy dogs in law enforcement, came and kind of evaluated her. She's got a little bit of work to do. She's still a little bit of a puppy. And when they walked up behind her and popped a bag, she jumped a little bit. I guess they're not supposed to be quite that scared. It scared me, and I knew it was coming. So I don't fault Myla, but I also thought it would be nice to introduce Myla tonight. She has been donated to the department as a dog, and the training is several thousand dollars worth of training this summer. Half of that training has been awarded through a grant, and the other half is being worked on right now through some fundraising through a foundation that helps fundraise. We'll see them at our night out against crime. But it's a wonderful program, and I just want to commend Scott for the core value of creativity that he has thought up here in a way to make his job and the community at Spectrum that he serves even better. So we wanted to introduce Myla to you too. All right, Destin.
Good evening. I'm Destin Koontz. So I started out with North Salt Lake about a year ago in May. I came from the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. I did close to 4 years with them, worked in the correctional facility. Decided to do that at 19 and find a way to give my wonderful mother a heart attack at 19 of what I was doing with my career. I've lived in North Salt Lake for close to 3 years now, and I've loved this area. I've loved this community. It's been great to work for everybody out here for the last year now. I hope this career goes a long ways, and I plan to stay here with North Salt Lake for a while. They've been really great for me. Been a great kind of lesson in life, just a good change of pace too, so it's been awesome.
Hello, good evening, everybody. My name is Jorge Carmona Mates. Like Chief mentioned before this, I was working down for the Salt Lake City School District, specifically at Horizonte, helping both in their youth program and adult education program. I just want to give a huge thanks to my family. When this idea came to it, they've been very supportive. They believed in me. And, you know, thankfully, you know, you guys were willing to give me a chance. So thank you for having me, Chief, all the other officers here, for everything that I've been learning here the last year. So thank you.
Hello, I'm Tyson Bishop. As he said, I graduated from Salt Lake Community College Police Academy in April. I've enjoyed everything about this city and the department. I mean, it's a great, great community, and I'm super appreciative to be part of it. I can't wait to see what the future brings. So thank you very much.
I'm Jessica Lancaster. I was in the academy with Bishop. I started the last week of the academy. I have no law enforcement experience, but this department has been really great at supporting and training, so I look forward to seeing where my career goes here.
Good evening, I'm Megan Kenny. As Chief said, I'm new to the department, not new to law enforcement, but I am excited to be here and serving you all in this city. And Buzz passed the baton to me, so I will keep his reputation and hopefully uphold that. Thank you.
Not everything with Buzz. I worked for him before he was the chief too, so I'm not just kidding. Mayor, would you be willing to come down and swear these officers in? And then we'll have one more item of business. But the mayor's coming down. I think I would just like to know, I know it's unusual to see a lot of us taking pictures and things beforehand. This department, as close as we are, we don't get together like this very often. We're all in different shifts. We don't see each other and gather in this big of a group very often. And so that is something a little bit special for us to have this many officers from the department together tonight. So thank you.
I've been given permission to do this all at once. So raise your right hand. I state your name.
I, Jessica Lancaster.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will obey, well, I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution of the State of Utah. And that I will discharge my duties.
And I will discharge my duties.
Of my office with fidelity.
Of my office with fidelity.
Thank you. So this is the part where I say, White Highlander, if I'm happy. Anyway, thank you. Thank you so much for your service, and this is a great city.
It is, and if any of you would like to take a picture, each one of these officers has asked someone to pin their badge on them for them. Now's a great time for pictures, and we'll do that for about 2 or 3 minutes. I would invite each of you to please shake the hands of the council members, as you probably won't run into them, even though the mayor gave you his car description. I have not been notified that he's sped yet. Yeah, so, okay. Anyway, go ahead and invite whoever wants to, you want to have pin your badge on, and you can get pictures at that point.
Are we going to...
Stay up here.
Oh, we're going to take a picture. let's do that. And I'll move out of the way in a minute.
Thank you. It's impressive how many moms are here to support tonight. I think Dustin said it best that we sometimes give our moms heart attacks when we tell them that this is our career choice. It's not exactly what I think moms think we're going to grow up to be. But to the moms and the family members, I promise you that we will do our best to keep them safe. And as you can see, we have a fine crew of officers here. And they support one another, and that's the most important thing, is that they're supporting each other and watching out for each other's safety as they're taking care of the safety of this community. And I appreciate each one of you. I consider it a tremendous honor to symbolically represent you on so many events with this city. And I'm always, always proud of the way our officers of this department are the ones that are standing up and doing the right thing. They're never looking to unofficiously use force. I'm amazed how much de-escalation and talking things down and trying to help people through their crises is a mantra of the department. And they're not afraid to use force. They're not afraid to do what needs to be done. And I'm proud of that, but I'm also very proud of their desire to be guardians and helpers to this community. So thank you, each of you, for your service and your willingness to serve both our new officers and those who have been here for a while. And with that in mind, I'd like to just finish by inviting Deputy Chief Fritz to step up with us for a minute. For those of you who know or don't know, he's not forgotten to remind me, this is Deputy Chief Fritz's last week with us. He came to us 8 years ago?
Seven.
7 years ago from Salt Lake City as a deputy chief in Salt Lake City. What a tremendous win for the city of North Salt Lake to have the experience of this man with us. There's not very many problems that we have faced in the last 7 or 8 years that Chief Fritz has not had tremendous wisdom and insight and understanding and advocacy for the community and for the officers, and just an amazing presence that with his departure, it will be felt in our department. I'm going to probably still reach out to him from time to time, except he's changing phone numbers and moving out of state, I think. So anyway, I already did. I'm really going to miss his professional advice and my professional association with him, but most of all, my personal association with him. I've worked with Terry since probably mid-1990s when we were in the Salt Lake Metro Gang Unit together. We were both school resource officers, him at East High and me at Granger High at the same time. I've just had the privilege of being associated with him and calling him a peer and a friend for over 20 years now. And I want to tell you that he has earned every nickel that this city has expended in having him as part of this team here. And Terry, thank you so much. I have a couple of presentations here for you. Thank you, Chief William. First of all, we've put together just a little shadow box of your badges from North Salt Lake. I know you've got them from your Salt Lake career also, with a little note thanking you for your years of service with us, wow. Terry. And Terry had a say in how this was put together, but hopefully it's something that will be a little conversation piece in your
Absolutely.
Wall or your office. And we appreciate that. It's
thank
got
you.
His badges.
We've got to get a picture with that one.
Yep.
Pop up in here.
And then this might be a little bit of a surprise for him because he brought his own personal gun to the department. But as I mentioned a couple of months ago when we surplus several guns, that an officer is authorized to carry an off-duty gun. as long as they continue to stay qualified with that nationwide. And so we would also like to present you with your retirement gun from the city of North Salt Lake.
Wow. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I had to pull out my glasses to even see what it was. That's pretty sad, right?
And then finally, can you invite your wife up here?
Oh, yeah. Bonnie.
Well, we'll get a picture of all of us in just a minute, but you're going to be in that picture. So.
Wow.
That's cool.
As you have all seen tonight, we can't do this job without the support of our loved ones. And Bonnie has stood by Terry. The call-outs, the endless hours, the coming home in a bad mood, which is generally the days he worked with me, all of those other things. And Bonnie, this is not even close to a symbolic thank you. But thank you so much for your support.
Did she call you and tell you that stuff?
She called me and said, Terry likes flowers. Make sure you get some. But council, again, I know that each of you know the great work that the department does as an organization, but for those of you who have supported Chief Fritz being part of this department, thank you. And Terry, thank you so much for your 30 plus years of service to law enforcement in this state. If you want to say anything, yes, sure can.
Absolutely want to thank you for the honor to work in North Salt Lake Police Department after 38 years in law enforcement. And like the chief said, I had a gut full in Salt Lake City. I came here and it was a pleasure to work here in a well-policed community, not high crime compared to where I came from. And it was nice to actually sit down with my peers and the chief and the rest of the officers and discuss strategies and operations that we could successfully take on here in this community that quite frankly, I don't think we had the staffing levels to do at times in Salt Lake City. So it's been really nice. Real nice to be able to have a high-level conversation with my peers, the chief and my peer deputy chief, William, that we can actually accomplish some things that hopefully make a difference for the officers that will follow me and follow the others, that when they retire, that you'll still have the top-notch police department that you have today, and we grow and evolve, and things have changed a lot. I mean, a lot of guys joke that, you know, did I chisel my reports when I started, and did I use a call box on a horse when I started? You know, we've evolved to drones in the skies now, and so it's fantastic. I want to thank you all for the opportunity, so thank you.
Thanks. I'll meet you guys out there. Mayor and Council, thank you for letting us take a half hour of this meeting tonight to welcome and say farewell to our most valuable resource, and that is our wonderful officers. But I want you to know, on behalf of the officers, we could not do that without the support of this community, and that's who you represent, and we recognize that, we appreciate that, and I will tell you that we are committed to your neighbors and your constituents who elected you to entrust us with this great and noble responsibility. We'll continue to do our very best. So thank you for your ongoing support of the police department.
Thank you, Chief.
It's a real honor to meet all of the new officers and to be part of the success of this tremendous department. Thank you.
I was going to share something. I'll share it because I'm going to take you back to Bruce Willis, The Sixth Sense. There's a scene where the little boy has not confided in his mother of his gift or curse, and they're stopped at a bike accident, and he says, "Mom, I'm ready to tell you my secret." And he proceeds to tell her that he can see dead people. There's one standing next to the car. And she says, "That's not funny." And he goes on to say, "Grandma says hi," and that's when she really lost it. And he says, "You said something that day at her grave." And the answer is, "Every day." And she said, "I asked her if she'd ever been proud of me." And I've used that with my children. Hashtag every day on all my communications. And I feel that way about our police department. Hashtag every day, they make me proud. And I really feel honored for these fine young and older men and women and the great job they do. So thank you, everyone, and thank you to the family for supporting. And there's two kinds of people, those that live in North Salt Lake and those that wish they did. So thank you. Our next item has been tabled because Mason's ill. So we'll go right to our active transportation report from Councilmember Knowlton and Sherry Pace.
Well, and now for something entirely different. Sherry and I are going to share some lessons learned and reflections on a unusual opportunity that we both had in which we traveled to Hoboken and Jersey City, New Jersey, which are both right across the water body? East River? Hudson River. From Manhattan, terrific views of Manhattan, and we learned about something that they've done, which is actually really remarkable. They took a normal average level of traffic fatalities and injuries of all types, car injuries and fatalities, bike, ped, just a sort of, as you would guess in a normal American city, and both of them took them to just about zero. Hoboken totally zero for 7 years and counting, and Jersey City just shy of zero. And it's a really remarkable story of creating a safe environment even as that activity of active transportation really flourished. So even though I'm leaning out, Sherry did the bulk of the work here in preparing this presentation. It's not a long presentation. We're going to focus on two things. One is, what did they do physically in their community to do that? And then two, what did they do in terms of the process that created those physical outcomes? Or what were the lessons learned? And I'll say one last thing, and then I will actually hand it to you, which is that you're going to sit here and think, what does a place right next to Manhattan have to do with North Salt Lake anyway? Well, that's the very same challenge that we had. We ask ourselves that every day and every 2 days. And within each presentation and opportunity, what can this teach North Salt Lake? That was a challenging answer, challenging question and answer. And so your sort of filter on this is probably the same as ours. Sherry, why don't you get us started?
Great. So when I was asked by Ken if I wanted to attend this tour with Ted and ride a bicycle in New Jersey, I was like, what are they going to teach us in New Jersey? I'm not sure why we're going here, but okay, sure, I'll go. This should be an adventure. I didn't know it was going to be an adventure flying into Newark when they were having all those problems. And I think Ted didn't know that either. We had to circle the airport over Pennsylvania for an hour for some reason. So I don't know if it was the problems that they were having now, but we both arrived home safely, thank goodness. So Liz, I've just provided some pictures of the various places we went. So this is the staff and all of the people that went on this tour. So representing cities in Utah, we had WFRC represented, UDOT, Davis County, Far West, the mayor of Far West there in the yellow shirt. Salt Lake City was there, West Valley, Midvale, Cottonwood Heights, South Jordan, Draper. Lehigh had the most in their contingent. I think they brought six or seven people. And then Parametrics, which is a consulting firm, and Bike Utah. And this is after we went on our morning bike tour the first day, we met with the mayor and some of the staff and discussed the things that they've been doing. So this was a really fun group. We had a great time and learned a lot. And I learned I can ride a bike without a motor, even though, you know, I prefer the kind with many, many more cc's. Anyway, this is Jersey City. And this is their city hall. So this was our afternoon tour where I think we walked like 8 miles in the afternoon. I got like over 18,000 steps, so it was crazy. But we learned a lot from these two cities. So I'm just going to summarize here the 6 points that we wanted to touch on. The first was Hoboken's program called Vision Zero, where they really want to take down all of those fatalities and not have any more of the serious injuries. And then we'll talk about street diets, the role of EV charging stations, what it means to daylight and intersection, surface treatments, and the opportunities that we can look for here in North Salt Lake. So this is the mayor of Hoboken. Just to give you a little bit of background on Hoboken, they are 1 square mile in area. Their population is 60,000 people, give or take some more, about 34% in homeownership. I don't think there were any actual single-family homes. They're all attached homes, whether they're townhomes or stacked flats. But it didn't feel like it was a city of 60,000 people. It felt like I felt like a really small community in reality. And Mayor Bala told us a story that in 2017, they had an elderly woman that was killed in an auto pedestrian accident on their main street. And that was the turning point that they said, this is enough. We need to figure out what the problem is here and we need to find some solutions to it because one life, one death is too many. So they started their Vision Zero program. This is a view of the waterfront, and this is where we started our bike tour. So you can see Manhattan across the river there and some of the waterfront improvements that they were doing. So their history, in 2019, the mayor had an executive order that it was his intention to eliminate all traffic deaths and serious injuries by 2030. 2 years later, they adopted their Vision Zero action plan. As part of their plan, they reduced the speed limit throughout the town to 20 miles per hour. They upgraded their fleet, their public fleet vehicles, with electronics that could help avoid crashes. And then they did infrastructure updates at 25 high crash intersections. So they evaluated where they had the most crashes in the city, and then they looked at those intersections to see what they could do. In 2025, they had redesigned the highest crash corridor, which is their Washington Street. They had started building protected bicycle lanes and infrastructure on the key streets in the city. So in this picture you see on the left, this is along the waterfront. Councilmember Knowlton there is the second bike waving. They chose to separate bike paths in this area along the waterfront between the pedestrians are on the other side of the landscaping, and then there's landscaping to the right that you see, and that's where the cars are. So they had a lot of room here. But it was quite enjoyable. People could ride bicycles going two ways, and you didn't worry about crashing into pedestrians because they were actually on another path just adjacent to it. So the next thing that they taught us about was street diets. They had to put their streets on a diet, and they took particularly close look at some of the ways that they were doing bike lanes, the ways that they were doing on-street parking, and what was happening at the intersections. So as part of their street diets, they wanted to reduce the crossing distances. And so they achieved that with various means, but on their main street that they have, this Washington Avenue, is they would put the concrete bulb outs at the corners and really make that street crossing much shorter for pedestrians. They also upgraded their signals so that the signal light would hold the traffic for 7 seconds and give the pedestrians a 7 second head start from the traffic. And so those two things together helped them with their intersections. One of the things that they started doing was they didn't have a lot of money or a lot of funding at first, so they started at these clearing of the intersections and daylighting of the intersections and their bike lanes with just using the flexible delineators. You can see on this path on the right that the traffic is separated by those delineators. They went into it knowing that these delineators would occasionally get hit by cars and would need to be replaced. And the mayor, his statement that he said was, you know, if a delineator gets run over and it's $100 to replace it, what's the cost of a human life? And certainly it's worth a minimum of that $100. And so that was an investment they were willing to make in their city. The other thing that they've done on the left side of this picture shows they took a lot of their streets and they turned them into one-way streets because they wanted to make sure they could still have on-street parking. They wanted the bike lane separated from the on-street parking. So most in Hoboken, the bike lane is between the sidewalk and the parked cars instead of having the parked cars on one side and then the bike lane against the travel traffic, separating the vehicles and the bikes completely. So here's a couple examples of just things that they've done to daylight those corners. So they used a lot of paint treatments, painting the lines that were not to cross, you know, showing the radiuses of the curve, and making it feel a little safer for pedestrians to step out onto the corner, clearing the parking of all four corners, each side of each intersection, and making places for buses to stop. They would be in these cleared corner areas. Oops, I think I went. Yep, this is an example of the two approaches to the street separation of the bike lanes with the parking. So In some places, particularly in Jersey City, they had some different approaches, and it was just dependent on which street. But in the picture on the right, you can see the parking on one side, the bike lane in between the parked cars and the sidewalk, and then this is an example of the bike lane that was in the flow of traffic with the parking on the other side. So there were pros and cons, and I think it just depended on what the uses were on the street, and so they made different choices here. But you can see on the corner on that on the right that they've just used striped painting on the ground to signify that's not a parking area. And they know that they had to do some parking enforcement to make sure that people didn't park there. The delineators help a lot to keep people from parking illegally, but for the most part, the paint was working pretty well. They did a lot of things with signage, so they wanted to make sure that people understood why they were doing the signage, and I thought this sign was, in particular, was interesting, where they posted that this was a location where an 8-year-old was hit by a car and killed, and to remind people that that's why they had made these improvements. And so it's a constant thought on their minds as to why they're making these improvements and why the streets have been changed and how they're putting a priority on the safety of bicycles and pedestrians. And then on the right, you see a sign that explains where you're supposed to park and where you're not supposed to park parallel to the bike lane. Oops, sorry. EV charging, so in some of these cleared or daylighted corners, they provided EV charging stations or close to those so that they could encourage the use of EV vehicles. And then the bike charging stations. So these bikes are the ones that are motor assisted. We didn't use, many of us did not use those bikes. They cost extra and we didn't get those for free. So there are a few of the people on the tour that did pay the extra, but we did not for our expenses. Yeah. And it almost killed me on the last uphill part. Most of the ride was fine, but it was just that last little ride back up to City Hall that was about to kill you, because every time you stopped for a light, you lost your momentum, and then you'd have to start again as soon as the light changed. But they used these, and they partnered with Lyft for these bicycle renting stations, and they actually put these in those daylighted corners and utilized that space, so they didn't have to come up with off-street spaces for the bike renting. I thought it was interesting in the next to the metro station in Hoboken, where they have a big population of commuters going and coming and going, they actually had the bike rental valets. So they had extra bikes that wouldn't fit in the stations, and they would have those off to the side, and as the bikes got rented, they would pull more bikes out and put them in the charging stations so that they could be pulled out to be rented. And they would do that in the mornings and in the afternoon to accommodate the transportation. And that was a private endeavor with Lyft, so that was something that they took on because the demand was so very, very high. It was interesting at the transit station in Hoboken that they were redoing, that there were just, 300-400 bikes, and those were private bikes, not even the rental ones, that were on all of the bike racks at the station. So this community really has embraced the bicycling and pedestrian. So a little bit more about the daylighting. Let's just give you a few more examples. You can see in this example that's closer up, and that's the painted area around the intersection that they daylighted. Here's an example of the flexible delineators. You could see they kind of made their own little bulb out there in that picture on the right, so that area could be reclaimed for non-vehicle use, whether it was for bike charging or just pedestrians standing around here.
And this is an example of them doing things on the cheap. And one of the things that we saw a lot was they just tried stuff. They didn't think, we have to do it Cadillac with a really great curb and beautiful planting. Sometimes they're just, let's just pencil it in and see how it functions. So there was a lot of let's try it kind of attitude.
Can I ask a question about this real quick. So in this picture here, and there were a few others where there was this delineation between the traffic and there would be a bike space or something like this. Tell me your opinion of how that impacts available parking and if that is problematic.
So they were really worried about that at first, that it would negatively affect the ability to park cars. But people adapted very quickly, and you couldn't park close to a corner anyway, so they may have lost 4 or 5 spaces around each intersection, but they didn't, in overall, they gained more because they changed some of the roads to one way, and it actually worked out better for them. They really haven't had a problem with it since they've done this, and they have a lot of people that still have cars, even though they don't have off-street parking. So next is some examples of more of curbing. So these are hard improvements. I thought Karen might enjoy this one on the left, because and maybe for SWIP too, you might enjoy that. I mean, this is like planted right up to the storm grate. So the water comes in and goes through this landscaped area and then into the storm drain. And I'm not sure how they kept that from had the sediment from going in the storm drain, but this was a unique use of that area, I felt like, because I just had never seen anything like this that actually put the storm grate right there in the middle of this. But there's a creative use that they reclaimed these corners with landscaping. And then the picture on the right is a bike lane that's actually delineated by curbing on both sides, and it's between the sidewalk and the traffic on that street. That one is in Jersey City. These improvements are in Jersey City. So one of the things that they taught us about these trial and error things is that they were not afraid to evaluate how it was working out and adjust. So in the picture that you see on the right, you can see the green, what appears to be a bike lane with delineators in it. They used to have, the bike lane was there, the parking was in the bike lane against the, what is now the bike lane, against the curb, and they had two lanes going in one direction, and people would double park in one of those two travel lanes because they had a problem with double parking. So already the street was already being used through traffic by one lane because of all the double parking. So they decided to change that and make that one travel lane the parking lane and move the bicycle traffic closer to the curb. And so they're not afraid to change and try it out and see if it worked better. And one of the things they said in Jersey City, they had a lot of complaints at first, you know, because this street or that street had been added, and they took it down to one travel lane, but really there'd only been one travel lane. And they said it, you know, for the first few weeks, there were a few traffic jams, but pretty soon the public and the traffic adjusts and they adapt to the new traffic patterns, and they found that it worked out really well for them. Some of the surfacing that they taught us about, this thermal plastic, this has been down for 10 years, they said, and it hadn't faded. It didn't need to be repainted. We did talk to them about testing it with snow, how much they snow plowed, how did it work with that. They don't have as much snowstorms as we have, but late recently we haven't had a lot either in some of these areas. And so these were some things that we wanted to look into and see about what kind of materials we would use so we wouldn't have to be repainting every year or two. So this was, they just said that they needed to test the durability of different products to come up with the right mix. And they have found that the thermoplastic is the best surface. It lasts the longest, it holds its color, it doesn't wear off. But you can see it, and it's become part of the landscape. I mean, everybody knows where the green lane is. And I think that's something that's kind of new to Utah. We're starting to see that more and more, but painting the entire lane green really gives you the sense of if you're at a vehicle and you come to an intersection where you're crossing this, you know that you're crossing either a pedestrian or a bicycle facility, and so there's more caution used when approaching those intersections. They've used a lot of different material variations and color changes. Those also signify the change in the crossing between pedestrians and vehicles, and really just raises awareness and makes people more aware of what areas they're coming into, that there may be pedestrians or bicycles. The next thing was just looking for opportunities. I thought this was an interesting park that they put under this viaduct, and I thought of our possible viaduct that we might have if we ever get a bridge over on 1100 North and some of the uses we could have. So I thought this was very creative use in this area to put park facilities. This is a redevelopment area that they're going to be building more apartments in, and so this was a good addition and a good reuse of that space. Oops. Did I go too far? No. So when they're looking for opportunities, they are looking for opportunities where they're doing resiliency improvements, areas that were being rebuilt, so street rebuilding, areas of redevelopment, even if they're just getting incremental changes and getting a portion of the trail or the circle that they were building around the city, they would just get it incrementally and get the developers to install those improvements. And then they look for opportunity for partnerships with private enterprises. So this was an interesting park. So I thought that it was very clever. It's named Resilient City Park. Resilient City. After a superstorm Sandy, they said in this area in Hoboken, they had about 5 or 6 feet of standing water. And so they had a real problem that they needed to deal with for storm surges. So this park was built, and it has underground detention for 2 million gallons and giant pumps that would pump that water back into the Hudson River. And then on top of this, they built this fabulous park, and it was a really good example of the things that could be done on top of storm drainage. If you can see in this, they have a big soccer field up there and soccer and baseball field in the furthest portion away, a basketball court. There's playground equipment. In the center is this really unusual community building with businesses in it. And I thought about our Hatch Park and how we might be looking at doing a community building that would have businesses in it. So there was an ice cream shop, a little coffee shop in there, and then there were some meeting rooms that people could rent for indoor event spaces or meeting spaces. But this was a pretty unique opportunity they had to incorporate into public projects. So this is just a close-up view of that park building there in that park that has the facilities in it. It was really a beautiful park. Really, they implemented a lot of storm drainage, LID things where the plantings all get watered from stormwater, and then also with the storage. Looking for areas of redevelopment, on the right here, they've taken a part of the street and put it into Tableside Cafe. And they're not afraid to put things right out there next to them and try this out. And then this is on the left is just a picture of some redevelopment improvements that they put in using different colors and the street. This was an interesting opportunity. They showed us that this is where they were not afraid to try some things out. So they had moved the bike lane closer to the curb, but that made a problem with where the bus pickup was and ADA accessibility. So they go in and they put these ramps up in the areas to see if the bike lane works there. And while we were there, people on bikes came zipping by, but a bus came by and was able to stop, and people who might be in a wheelchair or otherwise need a little bit better accessible route can just walk straight across onto this platform. It's not permanent. They can use it there while they're waiting for funding, and then they can put it in a new place after they bring in hard infrastructure. So we thought that was pretty creative that they had come up with these temporary measures. The partnerships that they worked with was Lyft. One of the things that I thought was unusual, they chose not to have scooters in their community. They did try them for a short time, but they liked the bikes better than the scooters. So this is the location on the left is the place where they have the valets that come and refill the bikes because it's very close to the transit station. But I was amazed at the infrastructure and the number of bike rental places they had. They were everywhere. It was extremely easy to get on a rented bike in any location within just a few blocks from where you were. And these are private companies that come in and put in this infrastructure and for profit. They have a lot of people that use them to do Uber deliveries or DoorDash deliveries, and so they were extremely well used, surprisingly. These were in Jersey City. I think actually the one on the right is in New York City when we went across the river on Monday night to see the sites over there. But these are bike storage places. So these are not, you don't rent bikes here. These are for personal bikes to be parked and locked up so that they didn't have bikes being attached to infrastructure around the city. So, and again, this was a private endeavor. This is not city funded. You pay to lock your bike up at these locations. So, lessons learned. This is where Ted's going to come back.
I have a bit role in this whole thing. There is one important way that we are very similar to Hoboken and Jersey City that is obvious but and needs to be said. Before they started, active transportation was a fringe activity. And that tends to be, there's kind of this story around the world of places, there are places that'll say, we can't do that, nobody bicycles. And there are places that say, we can do that because a lot of people want to bicycle. And so they do it. And because a lot of people want a bicycle, it tends to come to fruition. Even so, the majority of people in these communities do not bicycle. But these are beloved improvements, and they are a source of civic pride. And I will tell you, we had this ongoing conversation about how hard was it to do politically. And there was a little bit of challenge. And then there's the converse, how hard would it be to take them out? It would be impossible because they are beloved. And they're beloved by people even if they don't bicycle because it's part of a community that says, look, we have a really high quality of life. It's a great place for older people or young people to get around. You don't have to be wealthy to enjoy our community amenities, and they just love these improvements. So I just wanted to note that. I tend to run into this everywhere I go that people will say, we can't do that, nobody bicycles. But every survey that we do at WFRC says people want to bicycle, and they don't because the infrastructure is not safe. All right. So now to the actual lessons learned.
On that note, too, one of the comments were that those improvements were loved by the people who are driving cars because now they could see at the intersections and could see the cross traffic that was coming. They could see pedestrians. They were less afraid that pedestrians or bicycles were going to dart out in front of them. So it wasn't just the bicyclists and the pedestrians that like the improvements. It's the people who are driving their cars. They also like the improvements.
So Hoboken, Sherry said, a city of 60,000 people, it was very clear that they had a clear statement of this is our goal as a city, and they owned it top to bottom. So it was mayor, council, staff, and the community, piece by piece, really got engaged in it. And that alignment behind a shared goal, regardless of what the goal is, maybe our goal is not this necessarily, but a clear alignment behind one goal, it was very dramatic what they could do in their community when everybody knew what the goal was. The second one down, they involved a lot of people, and that sort of group, large group of people engaged in the work started to create its own sort of level of enthusiasm. That's the second one down. Do you want to hit the third one?
And I was just going to add, as far as the citywide interest, when they started on limited intersections doing these daylighting of the corners, there were certain city council members who were like, okay, this is great in the downtown area, but don't do it in my neighborhood. And then after it had been done in the downtown area, all of a sudden their constituents were saying, well, why aren't you doing this in our neighborhoods? And so then they were coming back and wanting to get the other streets in their neighborhoods on the same program to have this. They thought that was really great. One of the things that the mayor emphasized in Hoboken was, don't worry about, you know, starting small. Don't worry if you're just starting with some paint and some flexible delineators. Just start. Just do something. And don't wait for that big grand outcome or the big great big project where you can do some beautiful separated bike lane with, you know, all the bells and whistles, but start small. And then he said, when you do start small, they're seen by residents as actual dramatic improvements. Even though they're small improvements on the scale of things, they are really seen as these amenities, and the public comes to love them and wants them. They really did see it as enhancements to their quality of life. Again, just I'm jumping to that next one. The small changes don't have to be expensive. They can be paint and the flexible delineators. And then those small changes, they gain momentum and spread throughout the city. So those were really the key lessons that we took away from the trip. Do you have any questions? Yeah.
Thank you for giving us a chance to talk about this tour.
I have a question. I love this idea of starting small, and I feel like we've started that a little bit in our city. I know that there were some decisions to do some pilot bike lanes. Can we get an update on those, how they're going, if they're still in place, if they seem successful?
We haven't started that pilot program, but it kind of got pushed back a little bit, but I think we got a grant for it. Okay, we did get the grant for it. So do you know when that's this next fiscal year?
I think so. I have to check with Allie.
Yeah, we'll have to verify with Allie, but we did get a grant for that pilot program. So we will be starting that soon.
I would love... I remember the roads that we talked about, but it's been now, I think, probably like a year since we talked about it. And given this idea of like paint and flexible delineators that don't have to be really expensive, I would love to look at that map again and maybe we expand it, especially if it has to do with just paint and restriping. I think we could find a couple other places to pilot that aren't the, I think it was just one side parking, right? That we're restricting parking on one side of the road for that project.
Yeah, along Orchard Drive,
I think. Yeah. So I think this is fantastic, and I would love to see us do this as soon as possible.
I have a question for Ted, and I haven't seen any numbers, just my perception. Salt Lake has a bike share program, and the scooter killed the bike share. Is that a fair statement?
I think that the scooter inhibited the growth of the bike share, so I think you're in the right direction. But I kind of view them as like their siblings. And, you know, they're about people out there getting around in a way that's fun and doesn't take up a parking space. And people view positively and have a positive association with the city. You know what I mean? And so, in fact, I think there was an article today about Salt Lake City leaning into the scooter explosion and saying, you know what, let's embrace this. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Okay. Did anybody ever do any kind of survey of the health benefits that this kind of a program does for the people?
I don't know that we have that information, but we'll look and see if we can find something. And we know that when people bike, they are healthier. As long as it's safe, right?
So, well, sure. I mean, that's, of course, the safety of it. But I just wondered because, you know, I mean, it's a health benefit, too, I would think, for people doing the exercise of it as well. So just wondered.
When they're using the your own power.
The pedal bikes, of course, not the e-bikes.
Yes, the e-bikes were, I wish I had an e-bike that last hill. But definitely, they said that the e-bike was really exploding, and mostly because it got people places faster, especially some of the DoorDash delivery drivers and things like that that would rent them to do their deliveries. They could get to places and deliver the food items or whatever people order on DoorDash. I don't do DoorDash, so I'm bad.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for the time on this.
Let's take a quick break, and then we'll start our regular session.